Good morning, Anu.
Good morning, Miriam. Yeah. Nice to be here.
Thank you for coming. Golden Chanter, where the idea is coming from?
Well, it was something which, I guess, primarily Orville, you know, because for a long time, what used to fascinate me, or rather bewilder me, about what Mother said about Orville, that it would be a place which would be able to ward off war. And I used to always think how that was going to be possible, because look at the bunch of complicated idiots we are, you know. And yet, here is this kind of aim. And I was actually, in the moment when that war broke out, I was going through Sri Aurobindo's ideal of human unity. And one saw that he was actually giving pointers for a nucleus to start. And when the mother created Orville, she really had this nucleus in mind. And a place which would be able to make that step across. Yeah, this was one of those things. And when the war broke out, it had a sort of double impact on me, because one of the things he says in The Ideal of Human Unity is about the necessity of man becoming sacred to man. You know, I would kind of look at this issue and wonder how, where the transition could be made. And it was this main thing, that once you are able to look at the other in a different way, change that change of perspective, that breaking of borders, then perhaps there is a way to overcome everything else that we're doing. Because now it has, on the one hand, it has become very simple to say, yes, war is a good global cleansing action, it's a good process of evolution. You hear all these things, even at the conference. And I keep wondering, but Orville was created for something other than that, you know, to take that next step. And perhaps it is about, finding that attitudinal shift where you start individually. You know, we can't do anything about governments or anything. It's not for us to do all that. But to change that perspective where the other, whom we kind of whitewash or blackwash as the enemy or the bad guy or the evil guy, and it becomes easy to go and just wreak destruction, you know. So those were concerns which come somewhere, the loss of humanity more and more in the world, loss of a certain, you know, this humanity towards each other, the tolerance towards each other, and not in a very, I don't mean tolerance in a very mundane blah sense, I mean this deeper recognition of the other as equally sacred as you are, you know? So these were some of the things.
You speaking that you started to think about, so actually the story was written over the years, right?
Well, although this, the story of the war, whatever had to go with it, affected everybody in the world, it affected me for, as I just told you about. It was a chapter which I had written in 2005. And when I wrote it, I had a sort of moment of hesitation. So why am I writing this? Even though I may be concerned, it's none of my business, you know. So I sort of put it away. And I worked on another book for almost another 3 years. And that book took a lot of effort. And I was very frustrated at one point. I sent the manuscript to a publisher. And I was sort of, after about a week, I was trawling through my files and I looked at this, deleted that, and I came across this one and I opened it, I read through it, and I started writing immediately. And it went on, I think, at an incredible pace, and within a month it was done, at least the first draft. And then, of course, I took a little time to, you know, rework certain things, refine it and all. But this...
It's your imagination story, or it's after the something that really happened? Because it's like, she was an American, yeah? She was adopted by Iraqi parents. Mm-hmm. So it's like, wow, you know?
Yeah. As I say, it's a work of fiction. Mm. So imagination plays the role of extending a certain limited view on things. But I do believe that life far surpasses fiction all the time. So even if we may not have heard of certain things in mainstream, there are so many things which you find out afterwards, it just blows your mind. So I thought, let's, you know, I didn't even think. These characters came to me with such insistence, and they were all as though they were sitting holding their breath. And I had to tell the story. So I told it. Something like that.
About 2 months ago, it was announced, or so to speak, it was introduced into Chennai. So how this thing went?
It was well received. We had actually it was done in a hurry, the whole book introduction. So it was a small but nice gathering. We had a nice interaction. We had a few readers. Actually, that's how the Auroville thing generated from there. You know, we were four of us doing, I think, just a 15-20 minute reading. And since it went very well, on the way back in the car, they said, you know, the others said, why don't we do it in Auroville? So I thought, hey, why not, you know? And first we got, I think, almost 12 readers, and it got very complicated. And then the cyclone happened, so we postponed it. And in the end, well, we were 8 people, and it was great.
Just enough, yeah.
Yeah, it was enough. Exactly. There you go.
Besides that story, you're also known as a poet in Auroville. And as far as I know, you are an older Aurovillian, yeah? Mm. What brought you to Auroville?
What brought me to Auroville is... you want to hear the whole story. I actually had a dream and about a man in a dhoti talking about an experiment in the mind. And I tried to... at that point, I was in college and university, and I thought, this is Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and I tried to find books on him, and I tried reading it, reading through Transcendental Meditation, and I said, okay, that's not for me. Put it away. And one day, quite by accident, I walked into the Sri Aurobindo Center in Calcutta, because I was looking for a book, and the librarian from British Council sent me there. And I walked in, and there was, Sri Aurobindo, 1950s, old man, and I didn't even look at the pictures. I just went in and I picked out a book. I didn't find the book I was supposed to find. And I picked out this book, Sri Aurobindo on the Mother. I don't know why I took that. I took it home. I read it that night. And after about the first paragraph, I was reading it loud to myself. And I was crying like a child at the end of it. Well, and when I went to give back that book, I had to cross a street. And there was a traffic jam. There was a traffic, whatever, lights. So I was waiting across the pavement. It was on the other side. And I just happened to look up, and there was surf washes whitest and Will's filter and God knows what, hoardings. And in the middle, there was a small thing which had the image of Sri Aurobindo 1920s, the one I saw in my dream. And next to it, it had, man is a transitional being, he's not final. So I kind of went across, read that thing, and then after that, I read everything I could of him, So that was the beginning. That's how I got here.
As a writer and a poet, you're also more, you can easily accept those coincidences, which actually, Sri Aurobindo might say, the play of the forces, right? Mm. And you're more open to them.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah. So how you feel that play in your life?
Well, as a writer, of course, you absorb things much more than maybe other people. I think all artists do, according to their...
More sensitive.
A writer, I think in particular, is like a sponge. You can see an image, you can see hear a situation, be in the middle of a situation, and sometimes sense much more or derive much more from it then, let's say, somebody else. Maybe a theater person will derive many more clues of personality and the way a person reacts to thing, a situation, than I would. Similarly, an artist in a different way, a musician in a different way, just to the sounds of, the birds. So I think we are, in a sense, we are like sponges, And we just, sponges in the good sense, in the sense that you absorb and you're more sensitive. You see through many layers. And maybe sometimes you are able to connect things.
Do you have a feeling that sometimes you're just a tool or a channel?
Yes, of course. I think that's the only way to write.
How divine?
I don't want to presume anything. But, you know, there is a moment when you know that it flows through you. And those are the best moments when you write because they come almost flawless. And other times you have to work a lot, you have to correct and refine. I've done that also. But the moments when I'm really totally satisfied and totally happy is the moments when, you know, you can tune in to the source. It's like a tap, you know, and it runs. And then it comes perfect. You are given all the clues you need to check, what you need to check, and you find them. You know, those are the moments it runs in such perfection that everything, you know, you do need to do homework. Like somebody asked me, did you go to New York? I said, no, I've never been there. And somebody asked me, have you been to Beirut? I was there during the war. You sounded as though you were there. Well, obviously not. You get the news, but news is just facts, you know. But there are things when you're hooked.
You transfer yourself into the shoes of somebody and you can see it, yeah?
It's more than that. It's more than just transferring yourself into somebody's shoes. It's like, it comes to you fully. And of course, you identify very well as a result to the person's voice, to the person's background. Like, you're given many clues and... Like I could feel I have to check this out about the city, I have to check that about a place or that about a kind of personality, surrounding of a personality. So I like found all the pointers and it went very, very fast. I think I was working almost 15 to 16 hours a day to get the first hour, just to get that first draft down, you know. And then, of course, you can do it with more detail.
Besides being a writer and a poet, is there any particular thing you do in Orville?
Look, when I first came, I was working in the school. I was working in Matrimandir for many years, and I was in the construction.
And construction?
Yeah, when we were putting the beams up. I worked in the workshop for a while, making those beams. And then I slowly graduated up the scaffolding to, you know, do that. And I think I worked there consistently until we put all the beams up, right to the top. And then we fitted them. We had the, you know, the nodes to, you know, join them and all that, right to the top. And then we took the whole scaffolding off. It was at that point I stopped, because then the work became marbling work, which was much more specialized. And at that point I started working in Portus. I worked there for 2 years. Running Portus, the shop, and all those things. And we had the basket system at that point. And I was training in dance. And I worked as a choreographer for almost, I think it was almost 15 years in Oroville that I worked. We had a very nice dance group, actually, at that time. And I was very happy to see, say, for example, Orisons. Things. So I said, my God, that's starting again. Because, you know, like, we had this very intensive. We would work every day, morning, afternoon, with the group. We worked with composers, musicians in Oroville. Yeah, and we performed in Oroville. We performed in all the festivals in India. We were invited also to, you know, the spring dance in Netherlands and stuff like that. But at that point, we were so strapped for funds and things like that, you know. So that thing is still on. But at that point, it was even more because we were even more, let's say. Anyway, so that was a very good phase. And then I had to stop because I had an knee injury. And also, I think, you know, there's a lifespan for things. Some people left, some people wanted to do other things. So that sort of failed. And the last, yeah, And the last one I did was in 2002. It was very interesting work with two dancers, which was Grace and Kanchana. One was from contemporary dance, the other one, Kanchana from Udavi, yeah. who has Odissi training. So, and then sort of things fell apart, and I had already started writing. So then I decided, okay, maybe I need to make a shift. So I went totally into writing. And what I try to do from time to time is to volunteer at Matri Mandir, Access Group, this and that. But in recent last 2-3 months, that's been a bit erratic because in the last 2 years, I worked on 3 books. So that's been very demanding. So it's mainly that for right now.
Do you have a feeling that we can really unite ourselves as a unit in diversity here around, or we are still not on that level as human beings?
You know, unity, we are looking, I have a feeling we are still looking for all kinds of external methods of unity in Oroville still. Whereas the mechanism of unity in Oroville is an inner one. And once we unite there, the outer unity will automatically manifest itself. It's funny, I was sitting in Arca, I had to do my email because my computer is not working. And I just opened the first page of there, they have this little booklet. And there's one sentence in which he says, if we could consider the growth in consciousness as our main work, a lot of our difficulties would be solved. And it's interesting that when she wrote the Charter of Oroville, when she wrote the second line, that to live in Oroville, one must be the willing servitor of the divine consciousness. And then she says, oh, they are going to, you know, fuss because I'm saying divine consciousness, but I don't care. And the Matri Mandir at the center represents the divine consciousness. It's not being said in the charter, but that's what it is. Yeah. So she knew that from the beginning. So it's not that she has gone away or something. There is a presence there. There is something was created for us. And I think it's a tool. It's not some kind of religious thing. It's not some holy thing. It's just a tool for us to make our own connection with this. And the more we, as a collective, find ways for that, that may be a good way for some people. Other people will have another way. But as long as our focus is on that, this unity will be formed from within. It's not going to be formed from outside, because all these years we've been trying that and it doesn't really help. We've talked ourselves into circles about human unity and, you know, all kinds of, I don't know, seminars and all kinds of things. And all of that is good. It's not that you shouldn't do that. We have, you know, it's not that you do everything. It's a city, so we have to do things on the outside also. Yeah. But it's just that this other inner work has to be done equally. They are of equal importance. You don't do one and say, you know, the other is not important, and you don't do only spirituality and say, oh, that is all rubbish. Then we are just stuck in the same old rut, you know. Our loss of humanity in terms of whatever is happening in the world, the whole chaos, the continuous war, the continuous disruptions that are happening, is that somehow also, because I was reading The Ideal of Human Unity and that had such an impact, as though I was, you know, discovering it for the first time, and suddenly you saw this war being played out almost as primetime entertainment, you know, it was like TV shock and awe and all that stuff. And about a month or so later, I came across a blog by an Iraqi woman. And suddenly, it was so touching, because here she was looking at it from her point of view, and suddenly you see another human being, you know, whatever their government may have done, whatever, you know. So for the sake of a lot of other issues, we are losing our humanity. So maybe this is a phase we need to go through. That's another thing I say in the book. We need to go through it. So that's it.
Majority, I think they had a short glimpse with the cyclone how little we are.
Yeah.
But when you're sitting in a bomb shelter, yeah, and you're thinking why,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
and why, if also we think about the cruel thing which was done in Rwanda, mm-hmm, why a child had to kill his own father to survive,
exactly,
just to stay alive. It's,
yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, where are we?
Yes, yeah, exactly. You know, like for the cyclone, a lot of people said it was like a war zone, but it was not a war zone because it was such
far
a protection. Yeah, you know, just the way the trees fell. But as you say, in Rwanda, it's like violence has become such an accepted norm. You know, you open the TV, you watch any film. There's not one now in mainstream films which does not carry a gun or some sort of
something
extreme like violence. And the children are growing up with that. So all these things, you know, perhaps there's no use protesting because protests get us nowhere. It becomes another form of violence. But it's just to become individually more and more and more aware and more that you reject it right from inside yourself, you know. And that will eventually, it's a long-drawn thing. It's not an overnight thing. And that will probably have its own impact. You know, like as a writer, what can I do? I can write about it because I have to write. You know, I have to write. I write about it because I have to write. But there's no pretension that I'm going to be able to change that overnight. But I have to write it because if it's not written about, then there,
it's,
you know, you
expose and it's accepted as
it, that accepted more and more acceptance of, you know, when I hear a thing, oh, war is such a good force of evolution, I said, yes, it is. There, it does fulfill certain, you know, things all over. But we are here in Oroville, and we have to find that other approach, you know, that other point of view towards it. Because if we here don't find it, then of course the world is not going to find it. You know, especially if I was, you know, like at one point she says that Sri Aurobindo said that Oroville was being created as a practical means to be able to stop the next, you know, major conflict. But the major conflict is totally ongoing, and the conflict is in us as a community, as individuals, you know. So there is like when I write about this book, it's almost like a prayer, you know, in a sense that we find this resolution inside ourselves one by one, you know.
Right now the emphasis is more on the outer growth than inner work. Mm-hmm. Can you see the difference between people who are here already 30, 40 years and really working on inner work and the others who...
You know, it's not about old and new, because recently I was reading a little interview about a girl who visited Oroville, and you feel she knows from inside what it's all about, even if she doesn't go every day or maybe has never gone to the Matrimana, I don't know. But she's clued in, you know, and that's a very deep confidence I have that's going to happen. It's just that, you know, when we start manifesting a place which has needed so much hands-on material effort, that somewhere we get carried away thinking, oh, we've done this, you know, we are doing it all. You know, even Matrimandir, we did it all, you know, you know, the city. But actually, it's not about us. We are doing it. We are just... how to say, we are just exactly, we are part of that experiment. Children, middle-aged, old people, everybody, whatever stage you enter Oroville into, you know, and belong somewhere else. Actually, that was one of the most beautiful lessons of the cyclone, is that it doesn't belong to us. You know, we may have thought it, we planted trees and we did that. It's all great. Yes, we did all that, definitely. But the final analysis or the final decision on Oroville is not being done by us, although it looks like it.
Some people believe that it is.
Some people believe, and it's all right, because if they didn't believe, they couldn't even do. They needed to believe that to be
but
able
I
to do.
Huh? The EU level, they need.
Yeah, that's that. You need that. But somewhere at one point, I think that's one thing as an artist which is very interesting, is that as long as you're doing something from the ego, you only manifest that much.
You know,
This is one thing I learned when I was a dancer and I had to go and perform and stuff. And I realized that as long as you're in the ego, you can go and dance and be technically good and be everything. But at one point, you have to forget
that.
And when you surrender, everything happens. You know, so I think that is for everything else, whether you're organizing or education or whatever. Yeah, so it's that, maybe just that sense of being there as the willing servitor. I don't know.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling, inviting me there.